Hey everyone, Mike Lanana here from Baseball America in the Durham office. We're joined by Teddy Cahill, who is in Tallahassee, Florida right now. He caught some action down there this weekend. Thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America College Podcast. Our college podcasts are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ, helping health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify. It's Monday. And those of you who follow along with what we do, you know Monday's a big day for us. Our college top 25, powered by Louisville Slugger, is out. Several changes to the top 10. Two new teams join in Houston and Oklahoma State. And it's April 30th. We're almost in May. The season is wanting to a close. This is do or die time for a lot of teams. It's an exciting time in college baseball right now, and we're here to dissect a lot of what's going on. If you look at our new top 25, one of the biggest jumps was UNC, a team that we had number six in our preseason poll, struggled out of the gate, went 7-7 to start the season. Eventually, they were knocked out of our poll. They've turned it around, and they made a huge statement this weekend at Raleigh, sweeping number two NC State for the first time ever in Raleigh, which is crazy to even think about, with the history between those two programs, the fact that that happened for the first time ever. It was a big statement. UNC is now in the driver's seat in the ACC with where their RPI is and their strength of schedule. They're looking really, really strong to get one of those national seeds in the tournament. Teddy, what did you make of UNC this weekend? And really the performance that they had that led them to moving up to number five in our poll.
Yeah, I thought it was really impressive. You know, North Carolina State had lost a series all year. And they have been really strong at home this season. You know, and I know that's not a long road trip for North Carolina. Obviously, it's, you know, just 20 miles away or so. And, but that atmosphere for those games, you know, I obviously wasn't there, but from what I can ascertain, like, they were feeling it at Doak, and, you know, they should be. That's a huge rivalry series, and, you know, so it's not a friendly environment by any means, so regardless of how long the road trip was, that's still a tough series for UNC, and they go in, and they beat, you know, State on the road, State 19-5 at Doak before that.
Hadn't lost a series all year.
Mike, what was it?
Hadn't lost a series all year. NC State hadn't lost a series all year before UNC came in this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, so State just goes out and you know, they're rolling, and UNC comes in, and you know, they find a way. And I thought the pitching for UNC probably is the difference maker there, right? I mean, there's a pretty, you know, I think four runs. It was a total run differential on the weekend, and you know, so it's UNC's bullpen arms that really stepped up without Josh Hyatt, who is suspended right now, and Cooper Criswell on Friday night. How about Cooper? You know, the way he took over. You know, they've kind of, UNC's kind of had some trouble since Gianluca Dell'Acqua went down, just trying to find the right rotation, and Criswell has really emerged as a big-time guy for them in that rotation, and he delivered on Friday, and then Bergner did the same on Saturday, and they got enough out of Tyler Wong on Sunday, and they go on to sweep a hugely significant series.
Yeah, they did shake up their rotation before this series. As you mentioned, Cooper Criswell, a guy who transferred, he's a JUCO transfer, along with Jackson Hesterly. They went to the same school. Hesterly played a big role in last weekend's series sweep against Georgia Tech, hitting a pinch hit grand slam. Criswell has really established himself as a trustworthy starter for the Tar Heels at this point. He's a guy, he's not overpowering, he's not going to throw it up there in the mid-90s, but he has great command, good off-speed stuff, and good angle. He's 6'6", a tall, lanky, experienced right-hander, and he gave them just what they needed on Friday. Behind him, Austin Bergner had his best start of the season, probably. I mean, he went 8 innings, struck out 11 batters, was dominant against NC State.
I
think so, too. And shifted Tyler Baum to Sunday, who had previously been starting on Fridays, but struggled his last couple times out. It was obviously a very successful weekend for UNC. It seems like they've figured things out from a pitching perspective, as you mentioned, after losing Luca Dellatri. And even though they didn't have their closer this weekend, it shows just the depth of arms they have on that staff, that they're able to piece it together and defeat a really, really good offensive team in NC State, a team that has been hitting the ball with authority all year long. So for UNC, obviously, I mean, this is the team that we envisioned when we ranked them as high as we did in the preseason, and pitching depth was a big part of it. And I think it's taken a little time for them to find the right roles for all these guys, but it seems like those roles are starting to be solidified a little bit. Meanwhile, NC State, they dropped to number 7 in our poll after being at number 2, which is their highest ever ranking in the Baseball America poll. They're now in 2nd in the Atlantic Division after looking like they were about to run away with it. Clemson had a big weekend at Virginia, and suddenly they're in 1st place in the Atlantic. They're going to be vying with UNC for the ACC title. They're at number 10 in the RPI, number 10 in our poll. Teddy, what do you think of what Clemson is doing right now?
Yeah, Clemson had a little bit of a hiccup a few weeks ago. And, I know there was some angst. I saw it in the chat. I saw it on Twitter among Clemson fans that, that it was going to be a little bit like last year, where they started the year so well, and then they kind of hit a wall maybe in the midseason, maybe mid-April, I think it was last year, and they just kind of coasted into the NCAA tournament. They got a regional host spot, but a lot of people were stunned that the committee had given it to them over Virginia. So there was some concern that this Clemson team might be trending that way, but emphatically, over the last couple of weeks, they have said no. The Tigers are not going anywhere, and they've won now 8 straight games. And, yes, they're doing this against, some of the lesser teams in the ACC. But, this is a Virginia team that was coming off of a serious win against Louisville on the road. And, so Clemson goes up there and, sweeps a series and is, like you mentioned, is sitting in first place in the division. And, if North Carolina slips up at all here, Clemson could be right back at the top of the conference. They have a tough series this coming weekend against Florida State. It's going to go a long way to help it decide both the division, the conference, and host spots. But the way Clemson is playing right now is very impressive, and to see them be able to pull out of that skid, I think is it's an older group. When you have guys like Chris Williams and Seth Beer and Hennessy in the rotation and Higginbotham, I mean, these are guys who've played a lot of ACC games over the years, and I think that experience is showing over the last couple of weeks.
No doubt, and as you mentioned, they do have a very tough series coming up as Florida State is coming to town. And as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, Teddy is in Tallahassee. He didn't just go down there to hang out. He was down there watching some Florida State baseball, and he saw some history this weekend. Mike Martin tied the all-time wins record for a college baseball coach, and he has the chance to surpass that when the Seminoles go to Clemson this weekend. Teddy, how did Florida State look to you this weekend when you saw them? They're facing their heated rival, Miami. They took that series, although Miami spoiled Martin's chance of breaking the record at home when they won that final game on Sunday.
Yeah, so I came in on Saturday after watching a couple games down in Gainesville, Florida, beating Auburn in their series. And on Saturday, on Friday night, it was a 2-0 win for Florida State. It was a really good pitching performance from Drew Parrish, a career-high 13 strikeouts. And then Saturday was a little more offensive. They really did a great job of taking advantage of any mistake Miami made. And Miami has a young team. They're running out 5 or 6 freshmen in their everyday lineup. And as a result, there are some defensive miscues to be had there. And Florida State just punished the Hurricanes for them throughout the game on Saturday, and they really cruised to that win, which was Mike Martin's 1,975th of his career, matching the great Augie Garrido for the most wins all time. And then on Sunday, not want to get swept. Jim Morris coaching his final games here in Tallahassee before he retires following the season, did not want to have Mike Martin, his former boss, he was actually an assistant coach here for 2 years. He didn't want the record to be set against him. Miami didn't want, swept by Florida State, they didn't want that record to be set against them. And I think they came out pretty motivated on Sunday, and Florida State has been really banged up on the mound. And it got a little worse this weekend when Andrew Karp, who had been really good for them in the rotation over the last few weeks, he was sick, and he only could give them 1 1/3 inning. And from there, Miami was eventually able to get to some of the more inexperienced arms in Florida State's pitching staff and ran away with an 11-5 win. But this Florida State team is the exact kind of Florida State team that you would come to expect. It's a team that really grinds out at bats. They have some power in the lineup. Drew Mendoza can really get into a ball. He only has 5 home runs this season, but when he gets into his home runs, they go a long way. And Cal Raleigh's so solid behind the plate. It's a pretty experienced team, and it's just a solid all-around group. And if they can get a little healthier on the mound, and that should happen. Andrew Carr does not. This isn't an illness that's going to affect him going forward. And Cole Sands, who's missed the last 2 weeks with some bicep tendonitis. Florida State's hopeful that he'll be ready to go next weekend. So if they can get him back, I think that really makes the pitching staff a lot stronger. TJ Van Eyck was great on Saturday. He's a freshman, and if they can have him in whatever role they want him in, whether that's starting or helping the bullpen, I think all of that really helps to strengthen this team and set them up well for the final month of the season and then getting into the postseason.
Yeah, obviously the Seminoles is a team that we really liked coming into this season. Number 3 in our preseason poll. They've battled some injuries really from the first week, losing Tyler Holton early in this year. They're still in the race. They're 3.5 games out behind Clemson in the Atlantic Division. And as they go to Clemson this weekend, they do have a chance to close that gap at least a little bit. So we'll see how they do going forward in this ACC race. The picture of the ACC right now does look different than it did a couple weeks ago. You had NC State and Duke leading the Atlantic and Coastal divisions, respectively. Now, both those teams are 2 and 2.5 games out in each of those divisions. Clemson is first in the Atlantic. North Carolina is first in the Coastal and 1 game up on Clemson overall. It's going to be interesting to see how this conference shakes out these next few weeks. Duke is going to have a chance to close that gap. Their next ACC series is going to be against North Carolina after both teams take a break for exams. So things aren't done yet here in the ACC. There's still room for some of these teams to move up and for some of these positions to change. And speaking of conferences where the complexion has changed drastically, the Big 12 has been really tumultuous these last few weeks as far as trying to figure out which team is going to come out ahead. This weekend, Oklahoma State, a team that we've talked about as a team to keep an eye on, a team that was on the rise and seemed to be doing some good things, they've jumped all the way to the top of the standings. They're 3 games ahead of second place Texas, and they did it in impressive fashion this weekend against their fierce rival, Oklahoma. Josh Holliday, the head coach at Oklahoma State, is now 20-6 against Oklahoma in his 6 years as head coach for Oklahoma State. And you look at what they've done, they're 15-3 in the Big 12. Suddenly their RPI is at number 21. They went from a team that a few weeks ago was on the bubble from the NCAA tournament to being pretty much almost a lock at this point. They probably are a lock at this point to get into the tournament, especially if they hold on to this lead. And I for one, was really impressed seeing the kind of performance that they put together against the Sooners. I think what really stood out to me was the way their pitchers performed, which was something that they really needed. They started off rough on the mound this year, but they seem to be putting it together. Their ERA in conference play is 3.96 compared to an ERA that was floating around 5 in non-conference play. Carson Teal set a great tone for this series when he threw 8 strong shutout innings against Oklahoma in the opener. They look like a very dangerous team right now. And especially with both Texas and Texas Tech losing series this weekend, it seems like the Big 12 is their conference to win.
Yeah, it was really emphatic this weekend. They really took it to Oklahoma every game, and so they've now played four games against the Sooners this year. The three this weekend, and there's a midweek in Norman earlier this year. They swept them. Swept those four games, and they just absolutely throttled the Sooners, which is a team that, as our listeners know, I liked a lot, still do like a lot, but the Cowboys have left absolutely no doubt as to who the best team in that state is. Again, this weekend, it was a combined score of 27-3. And, you know, Mike, like you said, I mean, they found a recipe that works. And when I spoke with Josh Holliday coming into the year, he said he knew that it was going to take them some time, that there had just been so much turnover that it was going to take them some time to gel as a team, to figure out what roles everyone fit in, both in the lineup and on the pitching staff. And they took their lumps early. They lost a series at Arizona State. They lost a series to Eastern Michigan on back-to-back weekends. They lose the first Big 12 series on the road at Texas. Since then, however, I mean, they've really just been playing fantastic baseball. They've won 15 of their last 20 games. And they found some of these roles. Rob Walton has gotten the pitching staff right. They've found an offensive alignment that works for them. And they have, Carson Teal, like you mentioned, Mike. I mean, he stepped up and had a great start on Friday night, and he's really settled into that role for them. And, Colin Simpson continues to crush the ball in the middle of the lineup, and they've put the right pieces around him to build a strong offense. And they have a three-game lead in the Big 12 with six games to play. And it's not going to be an easy finish for the Cowboys, and they're well aware of that. They go to Baylor, in a couple weeks, and then they have Texas Tech at home. So those are six tough Big 12 games to play. But for right now, I mean, they've clearly demonstrated that they are a team, a force to be reckoned with in this league. They're sitting in a position that makes it look like they're going to host a regional, assuming they can finish this out. And it's just been a very impressive month here for the Cowboys.
And you look at the rest of the Big 12, and first, I mean, Oklahoma State joined our poll this week, as you could probably gather from our conversation about them. They're at number 19 in our poll. Oklahoma dropped out with the series loss. And as I mentioned, I mean, this conference has been really, really tumultuous over these last few weeks. You look at some of the series this weekend in particular, TCU is a team that has struggled mightily with injuries, especially these last few weeks. Losing Lucan Baker for the season, losing Jared Janzik for the season was a huge blow to them. But they're not dead yet. They won a series this weekend against Texas Tech, which was a huge series win for them. Texas Tech dropped in our poll to number 9, still the number 3 team in terms of RPI, still in very good shape, but 4 games out of the conference lead at this point. But TCU winning that series, they still have a lot of work to do. They're at number 67 in the RPI. They're at 6.5 games back in the conference. They're not going to win the conference, but they're 22-18 overall. They need to stay above 500. They do have work to do, but that kept their season alive at least a little bit, gave them some glimmer of hope. West Virginia wins a series against Texas, and West Virginia is a team that their RPI has been really all year long has been right there in tournament range, but they haven't been able to get their record above 500. They're still below 500 in the Big 12. They're 6-9. That's something that they're going to need to take care of. But they're at number 34 in the RPI. They're 22-19 overall. It's going to be interesting to see who among this middle section in the Big 12, Oklahoma included, Baylor included, which of these teams arise as tournament teams and get those at-large bids.
Yeah, I want to mention Baylor, too. I mean, they've won 10 games in a row, and they're now back to 500 in the conference. They have a top 40 RPI, and they have that series win against Texas Tech. I mean, they're looking really good right now, too. Steve Rodriguez has the Bears playing very well, and you know, we knew last week when we were putting together our field of 64, I think we only put in four Big 12 teams, and we knew that that probably wasn't right. We knew that somebody among this group of Baylor, TCU, and West Virginia was going to rise up and make a run in the final month, and we just weren't quite sure who it was going to be. And so far, the answer is all three of them. So how this finishes is going to be fascinating to watch.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt about it, and we'll be here to guide you along the ride, and we'll be talking about the Big 12 quite a bit, I'm sure, in these next few podcasts here at the end of the season. And now,
this weekend, a huge Big 12 series with Texas, playing Texas Tech, like you mentioned, Mike. You know, Texas has kind of been on the edge of the host race, and they really need this one this weekend, I think, to stay in it. I think if they can't afford to lose this weekend if they want to host. Texas Tech is a little more certain right now because they have a top five RPI, but Texas really needs this one. They can't afford to fall too much further down the standings, and they're, frankly, they need some RPI help to get to that postseason level too. So it's a really big weekend for them, and the Red Raiders are I mean, they've won back-to-back Big 12 titles. If they're going to chase down Oklahoma State, they can't afford to fall further behind, especially because they have to go to Stillwater, and this Red Raiders team just has not been as good away from home as they are in Lubbock, where they're almost unbeatable.
Right. No, there are plenty of juicy storylines in this conference, and as we mentioned, in the ACC as well, going forward these next few weeks. And now for a word from our sponsor, Health IQ. How would you like to save money for being active and physically fit? Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/BA or call 1-800-549-1664 to talk to a Health IQ agent. Mention the promo code BA for savings. Now, jumping back in here and looking at our poll, we did have another addition to our poll this week. At number 21, Houston joins the poll for the first time this season. A team that we've liked talent-wise, a team that we thought would have a good year this year, but their RPI has been really lagging behind their performance to this point. They hadn't been able to cash in on a big RPI series win until this weekend. Going to ECU, a team that was in our top 10, has now dropped down from 7 to 14. They go to ECU in an impressive fashion, sweep the Pirates, they join our poll, and beyond that, they're now in first place in the really competitive American Athletic Conference, a conference that now ranks third in terms of overall conference RPI. It's still a difficult conference to figure out. There's still plenty of good teams. South Florida remains in our poll. ECU, as I mentioned, slides in at 14. UConn is a team that we've talked about and has been on our radar and has been in our poll at various points this season. Do you think Houston is the team? Do you think they're going to hold on to this conference lead at this point? What do you make of them, and just how much of a difference did this sweep of ECU make for them in their tournament hopes?
Yeah, I mean, let's start with the last question there with their tournament hopes. It was massive. They had not been in a range for an at-large bid, and they knew that their RPI was going to continue to get better because the American is full of teams with really good RPIs. So even just by going to ECU to play three games, Houston was probably going to get a little bit better RPI-wise, but going out and winning three road games against a top 20 RPI team like ECU was massive, and it had Houston up to 50, and that combined with the fact they're winning the conference, you know, they're in great shape now, and they should be able to finish this out just fine in terms of getting in. And when I spoke with Todd Whitten last night, you can read more about Houston in Off the Bat over at baseballamerica.com. He said that early on in the season, he was kind of scratching his head a little bit in terms of the RPI, because Houston never went through any sort of sustained drought. They really don't have all that many bad losses. When you look at this, they're 9-0 against teams 150-plus in RPI. And so, I mean, then it was really dragging their RPI down. It was a little bit strange, but, I mean, the problem basically boiled down to the fact that they hadn't won anything on the road. Going into this weekend, they're 4-9 in road games. And you throw an 0-3 in neutral site games. And so going into this weekend, they're 4-12 away from Schreiner Park. I mean, that's part of the reason why the RPI had been where it was. But this weekend, you know, they showed they can beat a really good team on the road. And they finished off the sweep on Sunday. They held off a furious ECU comeback. I think this Houston team definitely has staying power. I think when you look at the top two arms in the rotation, and Trey Cumbie and Aaron Fletcher, they aren't overpowering left-handers. There are better stuff-wise left-handers in the conference. You don't have to look any farther than Shane McClanahan, who's going to be a top-10 pick next month for a stuff lefty in the American. But these two guys, Cumbie and Fletcher, really understand how they need to get out and pound the strike zone. They've been really, really effective for the Cougars this season. And they have two tough series left. They're home to UCF this weekend. They're at Connecticut the weekend following, and that's all they have left in their conference schedule. So it's not going to be easy for them to finish this. But I do think that, you know, right now with that two-game cushion, they won the series against South Florida, so they have that tiebreaker as well if they need it. I think this is a team that can win the conference title, and they've won either the regular season or the tournament in three of the first 4 years of this conference's existence. And so for all the times we talk about how topsy-turvy this conference is, and we talk about that a lot, Houston is kind of the one constant. They're almost always right at the top. And, you know, here we are at the start of May almost, and, they're right back where they often are in this conference.
And there's actually some separation now in the standings, which is not something we're used to seeing in this conference. There have been times this year and past years where you see 3-4-5-way ties in this conference. Right now, Houston has a 2-game lead over South Florida, 2.5 over Connecticut, 3.5 over ECU. So there's a little breathing room. Obviously, a lot can change quickly. You never know, but Houston certainly has the opportunity here to maintain their grip on first place. And as you mentioned, their next two weekends, looking at their RPI, I think as long as they take care of business, their RPI is only going to continue to improve. They have a top 50 series against UCF, and then they go to UConn on the road, a team that is number 13 in the RPI. If they take care of business in both of those series, there's no question their RPI is going to be much better than 50. They certainly, to me, look like they're in good shape, and obviously South Florida is too. UConn is too. ECU, even though it's been a rough these last couple weekends, you know, they lost a home series to South Florida and got swept by Houston. They've struggled a little bit of late, but still, in terms of RPI, number 7 team, in terms of overall record, they're in good shape. They just need to improve that conference record a little bit. They're sitting at 8-7 right now. But this is another conference where it's going to be exciting to see how it shakes out. I think we have a sense of who the top teams in the conference are now, but there's still room for some of these other teams to make a splash here at the end, and certainly the tournament is going to be a different beast entirely. Who knows who's going to win that one? It's a lot of evenly matched teams in this conference.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I'm really not looking forward to this week is trying to figure out if some of these host situations, and ECU is playing into that now, because you mentioned their RPI is still looking pretty good. It's still in the top 20, but they're now 8-7 in this league, and they've got a few teams ahead of them in the standings. They're tied for fourth, and you know, frankly, I don't know that a team like that can host a regional. Despite what the RPI says, despite the fact that they won a series against North Carolina, but now ECU has played most of the toughest teams in this conference already, so. You know, they will definitely have the opportunity to improve their conference record, to improve their place in the standings. They go to Tulane and play Cincinnati and then finish up against UConn. Those are some of the more mid-tier teams in this conference. But East Carolina's got some work to do after looking like maybe they could find a way to be a national or a top 8 seed this year. You know, now they're looking at maybe a bit of a climb to finish off and get a Greenville regional. And, on the flip side, South Florida, maybe they can find a way to host. They're sitting pretty good RPI wise. They still have a little bit of work to do, but maybe they find a way. Or I don't know if Houston can do it. There's a lot of RPI ground still to make up for them. But if they win this conference and they show some clear separation, maybe they are able to improve that RPI. But it's going to be very interesting how this all shakes out and how the committee handles some of these teams, because we mentioned UCF, and they're sitting at 41 in the RPI and 9-9 in the conference, and they have 2 wins against Florida. They have some other nice things on their resume, and it's a deep conference, and it's just going to be very interesting to see how many bids this league is able to get in the end.
Yeah, and speaking of bids and some of the uncertainty that goes into putting together our field of 64 every week, let's go out west for a second. Let's take a look at the Pac-12. I think we have a pretty good sense, and we have all year, of who the top teams in the Pac-12 are. Stanford and UCLA both have moved up in our poll. Stanford's back at number 2. UCLA is at number 8. Oregon State is at number 6. Those three teams remain atop the Pac-12. Stanford and UCLA are tied at 14-4, and Oregon State is 2 games back of them in third place. But you look at the rest of the conference, and it's really tough at this point to figure out, okay, which of these teams, maybe it's just one team, maybe it's two teams, can get at-larges beyond those three. I know we talked a little bit before we went on air about California, a team we both like. They dropped the series to Stanford this weekend. Their RPI is at 78. They're 10-11 in the conference. It's not looking as good for them. And then you look at Arizona, a team that seemed to be on the rise of late. They lost this weekend at Utah. Suddenly now they're 7-11 in the Pac-12, and their RPI has dropped to 60th. The Pac-12, beyond those top three teams, doesn't have a single team in the top 50 in RPI. It's a strange conference to figure out right now. It's pretty top heavy, less top heavy than last year when Oregon State went 27-3, but still pretty top heavy. What do you make of just of the conference right now?
That is a fantastic question, and what it is it's 3 really good teams beating up on everyone else, and then everyone else is at a pretty level playing field, it seems like. So, these teams just, in the middle churn on each other, and ultimately that leads to a lot of teams with not very good conference records, or at least not, the kind of overall records you're looking for. And, I still like Washington a little bit too. I mean, they're hanging out at 11-7 in the conference, but they're just 20-19 overall.
And 88th in RPI.
and they didn't have a great weekend against Washington State this weekend. So, it's really tough to figure who's going to rise up from this group. You still kind of figure someone's going to do it. I don't know who that's going to be. But someone else has to emerge from this group. And I think that Arizona, the next 2 weekends are kind of their season at this point. They have UCLA at home this weekend. Then they go to Cal. And if they're able to win those series, I think the Wildcats are going to be that team. But that's a tall order. Yes, you get UCLA at home. And Arizona plays really well in Tucson. That's one of the top teams in the country for a reason. And then that's not an easy trip to Cal. I think Cal maybe has a little more likelihood of pulling this off. I like the way the schedule sets up for them, even though they have 3 road series left. It's at USC, home to Arizona, at Creighton, and then at Arizona State. And, USC and Arizona State are over, they have RPIs more than 100. So it's not going to super help Cal from a RPI standpoint, but at least those games are on the road. At least those are pretty, you would figure California would be kind of favored in this game. You got the toughest team in their remaining list that at home with Arizona, and Creighton on the road. Creighton still sitting 54 in the RPI, so that can be beneficial for Cal as well. So I think it's sitting out there for Cal, but they're really going to have to win a lot of these games to make up the ground that they have to pick up.
Yeah, it's a really odd disparity in this conference right now to me, because you have three teams at the top who conceivably could win the national championship. They're that talented. They're in the top 10 for a reason. Any one of those three, you could see all three of them in Omaha potentially. I mean, they have that kind of talent. But then you have teams.
My current perception is that. And I don't know how I feel about that, because I question a little bit, they're beating up on these teams. And I think they're all really good. I think all three of these teams are really talented. But Oregon State still has played a team in the top 25. Do we honestly know? I just don't know. And, we know they're talented, but they really haven't. Some of these teams haven't been tested in a few weeks. And, it's just going to be very interesting to watch.
It's just, I mean, the Pac-12 has had some odd years in the last few years, but this year ranks up there to me in terms of oddity, just in having those three teams at the top, having teams like Washington State and Utah weighing the conference RPI down with RPIs nearing 200. And then the middle of the conference with really no separation and not, I mean, there are opportunities here, but it's not looking great for some of these teams too in the middle. It's hard to really handicap this race here and pick which one of these teams is going to emerge. It's an odd year for the Pac-12. Again, it's very possible this conference produces the national champion, but I don't know how many bids they're going to get. We're going to have to see. Staying out west, we have Cal State Fullerton, a team that was in our preseason poll, a team that we liked talent-wise, especially with what they were bringing back on the mound, but a team that started off the year really struggling in non-conference play, went 13-17, dug themselves into a bit of a hole. But this weekend, they go to UC Irvine and sweep UC Irvine. Now they're above 500. They're 22-20. They're now in first place in the Big West at 9-3. Their RPI is sitting at 40. And all of a sudden, Cal State Fullerton, doing what Cal State Fullerton does, they're looking pretty good to win this conference. And they're a team that we thought coming in was the best team in the conference. It's just taken them a while to get to this point. And this is their MO at this point. These last few years, if you've been paying attention to Cal State Fullerton, they play a really tough non-conference schedule. Sometimes they struggle. They play not maybe to the extent that they struggled this year, but they usually hover around 500 against a really tough non-conference schedule. And then they really do their work once they get in a Big West play. And then, as we saw last year, they played their way into Omaha. They could very well do it again this year with the pitching they have. They have an Omaha-caliber pitching staff, especially with the way their arms are throwing right now. With them, seeing them where they are right now, I'm sort of surprised, but also not surprised. How do you feel about the Titans?
I'm not surprised. I'll just not one bit surprised. I'm so surprised their record is 22-20. But to see them at first place at this point in the Big West, even as poorly as they started the season, it's not surprising that they have gotten here. We knew the talent was there. Anytime you have Cole Eastman in front of your rotation, that's a really good place to start any team. And I think that's been pretty significant for them, that they have the best arm in this conference, and so that they match up really well. In the last two weekends, they've won series against teams that in top two showdowns. The last two weekends, they played Hawaii and UC Irvine, and those are the next two teams in the standings, tied at 8-7. They won both those series. They've already played UCSB, which is sitting at 500, right behind Hawaii and Irvine. So Fullerton's already played most of the better teams in this conference, and they already have built themselves a bit of a cushion here. And don't look now, but their RPI is up to 40. So if they're just able to improve that overall record just a little bit, just get it off of, just barely being above 500, just a little bit more, they're going about that is, does any UCLA fan, because Fullerton, assuming UCLA knows, Fullerton's going to be in that regional, and I think it's much better for the Bruins if Fullerton's the 3 in that regional rather than the 4, because, you know, anyone does not want to be facing Cole Neesman, you know, on the to start their NCAA tournament. That is a really tough matchup. I don't care who you are. And, you know, this is not my official prediction, but if we get to Omaha and Cal State Fullerton is sitting there at TD Ameritrade, I'm not going to be the least bit surprised.
No, I'm not either, honestly. I mean, they've taken a slightly stranger path this year than they have in the past few years, but like we said, I mean, this is their MO. This is what they do. This is really just, you know, Rick Vanderhook at the helm there has been really good about getting these guys to turn on the jets in the second half of the season and playing their best baseball by the time they get into the postseason. It's just become a trademark of that program. And with that pitching staff, like you said, with Colton Eastman, a legitimate draft talent at the top of that rotation, they're as dangerous as any team in this tournament, especially if, you know, if they're a 3 seed or a 4 seed, whatever seed they are, you know, they're going to be, I know for me, a sleeper pick, you know, all the way through the tournament just because of the pitching talent that they have at their disposal. So Cal State Fullerton is a team to watch going forward. The West is as wild as it's ever been, but hey, it's fun. But obviously, we're in May now. We'll be in May. A couple weeks left in this season, and then we have the MLB draft coming up. It's as we're covering college baseball, we're cranking out draft reports. We're cranking out our top 300. It's going to expand to a 400, then a 500. This is a very busy time in baseball America, but Teddy, you had the chance to see firsthand, just the pitching matchup of the year between Casey Mize of Auburn and Brady Singer of Florida, two guys who are going to be among the first handful of picks in the draft. Casey Mize has a very good chance to be the number one overall pick, and Teddy, you wrote a piece on it on baseballamerica.com about seeing that matchup and what they brought to the table. But for our listeners, I mean, what was that experience like seeing those two guys go toe-to-toe?
Yeah, it was absolutely a fantastic showdown on Thursday night in Gainesville. There were, I believe it was 61 scouts checked in, you know, with Florida there to keep in. So it was packed scouting-wise. And, you know, sometimes we see these pitching matchups, whether we're talking about college or in MLB, and you know, they wind up being like 10-5 games or something, and they just don't live up to the hype. But this one absolutely did. 4-1, 3-1. Brady Singer outduels Casey Mize. Mize was very, very good. You know, he looked at, it was the second time this year I've seen him. He looked just about as good as he did the first time. He's just an incredible. Has incredible command of all of his pitches. You know, he's added this cutter to his repertoire this year, just kind of picked it up a week before the season started, and it's become a pitch that he throws almost as much as his fastball. And it was a cutter, though, that kind of was the difference in the game. He threw a first-inning cutter, a 1-0 cutter, to Jonathan India, who has been rocketing up draft boards this spring as he's putting together an SEC player of the season. SEC Player of the Year type season, a potential Player of the Year type season. And so he gets this 1-0 cutter, and it was up in the zone a little bit, and he is able to extend, and he sends it out for a 2-run home run. And that was essentially the difference in the game. And after that, Mize settled down. He retired, I think it was like the next 8 straight batters. And he finished with, you know, 7 strong innings. Singer just had one little hiccup, really just one inning where Auburn was able to string anything together against him. He was, you know, really, the fastball command was there for him. It was a really lively fastball, and Auburn just had no answers for him. And then Michael Byrne and Jordan Butler came on to shut it down for Florida. And it was a fantastic game. And Coach Kevin O'Sullivan, who has obviously run through an incredible amount of pitching talent, through Florida, and when you do that in the SEC, these sorts of matchups are going to happen. But he said he couldn't remember any matchup at Florida, you know, living up to the hype the way this one did. And he actually called back to one when he was an assistant coach at Clemson when they played Justin Verlander. And they had Tyler Lumsden, who was, I believe, the 34th overall pick in the 2004 draft. Those two matched up. It was a 2-0 ball game, the Clemson one. That was the only the one that sprang to mind to him. So that's how special this night was, that it was kind of just the perfect pitching matchup, and that both of the arms really lived up to form. And you know, Florida just is able to come out on top, and the Gators continue to roll along at number one. They've won 17 series in a row dating back to last year. And, again, it just it's a machine over there in Gainesville, and the Gators continue to look very much like the best team in the country.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time we had an actual real discussion about who the number one team should be in our call. I mean, Florida has clearly been the number one team in the country most of the season. They started the preseason number one. They briefly moved off of it with a little struggle early in the year, but they're rolling right now. They look we've talked about them a lot on this podcast. Obviously, I mean, they look as much of a championship contender as any team in the country. Wouldn't be a surprise at all to see them repeat what they did last year. And obviously the SEC, we've talked a lot about how stacked the SEC is, still the number one RPI conference, three SEC teams in our top five of our poll, with Ole Miss moving up to number three and Arkansas moving up to number four. Those races are still not decided. Florida seems pretty safely in first. Florida is pretty safely in first in the East, but the West is going to be a fun showdown between Arkansas and Ole Miss. Arkansas is one game up on Ole Miss at this point, so we'll see what happens in that conference as well. A lot of fun conference races going forward, as we've noted in this podcast. Teddy, before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to point a finger to from what you saw this weekend in college baseball?
Yeah, I wanted to mention here, we talked about Tennessee Tech at various times, and they moved into the rankings last week. They have that, of course, they have that exceptional winning streak, and they ran into 28 games this week before on Sunday. They finally lost for the first time in, like, I think it was like I saw 40 days. Is it 40 days? Maybe it's been longer than that. Almost 2 months, I think. It was a really long time since Tennessee Tech lost, and Southeast Missouri State finally gets them on Sunday. So Tennessee Tech streak comes to an end at 28 games. It's the longest winning streak since Utah Valley won 32 straight games, and I believe it was 2012. So just an incredible run by the Golden Eagles. And they continue to lead the nation in wins. And they're running away with the Ohio Valley Conference, of course, having won all of these games in a row. That's what will happen. I just wanted to applaud that streak because, 28 games is really unfathomable. And, for them to get to that point, obviously they've been playing incredible baseball all season long. And they're going to be a tough team in the tournament as well. We'll see where they end up. But that's a really strong offense. Kevin Strochin, Alex Jr., guys like that. And they have enough pitching to, make some things interesting. And of course, last year they upset Florida State in the first game of a regional. So, it'll be very interesting to see how they fare going forward. But again, congratulations to Tennessee Tech on that incredible streak.
No, it certainly is incredible, and it's there's a reason why they're in our top 25. Obviously, winning 28 straight games is no easy feat. So, congrats to them on that streak, and congrats to them on a great season to this point. I'm sure they're going to be a dangerous club going forward. But Teddy, thank you for joining us from Tallahassee. If you want to follow Teddy's work, you can follow him on Twitter at Ted Cahill. I'm at mlanana, M-L-A-N-A-N-N-A. Rewind that, replay that again if you missed that. I know it's a little complicated. But we want to thank all of you for tuning in to today's Baseball America College Podcast. Our college podcasts are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ helps health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify. Thanks, everybody, and we'll be back again next Monday.